parallel paradox called the doxolittle.
Waking up, I check the price of Bitcoin. Scrolling on down through the shitcoins. Hot damn, I'm up 20 bands. This is once again like, ooh, ooh, ooh. My account's at an all-time high. When big bulls are, make bearers die. Eat Milky Bars, so the price is gonna fly away. Today, I pray. Got my bags packed, only wish you had that. Try to tell the normies they ain't listen how they sunset. Big BTC, lil bro E, GRT. I've been telling y'all to grab that. Bought link, I ain't even do no research. Carry round bags so heavy that my knees hurt. Please sir, this is for my family. I've been buying daily for prosperity. Okay, you got your suicide stack. All in Bitcoin, I don't need no cash. Fuck hot bucks, they suck. I don't wanna pay stub. You can keep the cash, I'ma stack until that day come. Lambo, moonshot, I believe since day one. You know I'm finna pump this shit to Mars, no need to say none. You been on the sidelines, I'ma win, it's my time. Jumping on you fast, here hold my bags and watch them decline. Waking up, I check the price of Bitcoin. Scrolling on down, through the shit coins. Hot damn, I'm up 20 bands. Lessons once again, like, ooh, 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 ooh. My account's at an all-time high. When big bull taught and bears die. Eat Milky Bar, so the price is gonna fly away. Today, I pray. Shout out all the homies who just stack and stack. Mighty Van, Battle Down, Mr. Swan and Max. Every fellow OG, RCT, Loom Dart, R&R, Loops, and Kobe. If you don't know me, this is Strong Hands, homie. Have fun staying poor if you capitulate, homie. I could never do that, hardly ever go flat. Small team won't do full set if a hand can. I'm one with a whole stack, I'm Giga Brain Bull Chat. Okay, here's what happened before the IRS, man. I went football taught and the bearers died. It sounds tall tales, but it's no lie. See, I lost all my money in the exchange hack and the boating accident that happened after that. Plus, I'm down a couple racks from when I bought Zcash. It's okay, I'll write it off, whatever helps the tax, yeah. Waking up, I check the price of Bitcoin. Scrolling on down through the shit coins. Hot damn, another 20 bams. Blessings once again, like, ooh, 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 ooh. My account's at an all-time high. When big bull tar make bearers die. Eat Milky Bar, so the price went and flew away. That was yesterday.
Good morning, good morning, everybody. Happy Monday. Welcome to episode 101 of the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces. I am your host, Coleman, and I hope you all are as fired up as I am today. I think this is going to be one hell of an interesting week. I do not expect any hour of this week to be dull. I expect huge announcements, huge swings in the price of Bitcoin. It is going to be absolutely bananas. So I am really looking forward to it. And I'm also really looking forward to today's show. We have Joe Bryan joining us. He just joined us right now. He is the creator of What is the Problem? It's a really good, short documentary that he made and created. And it's really informal, and I think it's going to be a new kind of go-to. I direct people who are just entering the space. Really informative, great slides, easy to follow, and it's under an hour, so it's really tough to get lost in the content. So I'm really looking forward to picking his brain, seeing kind of how we created this and the purpose for it. And so make sure that you go ahead and retweet this link in this space so we can get a lot of people joining us. But I have Bob up here this morning. Good morning, sir. And I just want to give a couple quick shout outs to everybody in the audience. Wade on the Bitcoin Alaska handle. We have Death in Bitcoin. We have Jeff, aka Sippy Cup. We have Miss Penny, Dr. Nick, Jeremy, Don, Mr. Bitcoin, Keith, Cam, JP, Kay, and Sean King. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Coleman. Happy Monday. Yeah, this is going to be a good one. We have Joe Bryan, like you said, and he is only with us for maybe half the show. So if we can, let's hop right in.
Absolutely. So good morning, Joe. Welcome to the space. If you could go ahead and kind of kick things off and just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hello, everybody. As you could probably tell by my accent, I'm probably in the minority here, not being American. But Coleman and Bob, thank you very much for the kind invite to the space today. It's hard for me to really gauge how many people in space have maybe seen or not seen the video as it stands. So, you know, trying to get a sense there. I don't know if there's a quick and easy way to do that, Colm and Bob, because it would change the conversation slightly.
Yeah. So Joe, maybe it'd be helpful just to start out with your story. Like, how did you become a Bitcoiner? How did you see this problem?
To start with, I've been in, found Bitcoin in 2020, as I think a lot of people did during the pandemic. My background before that, I did physics at university, then went straight to Goldman Sachs. I was equity derivatives trader for 10 years, mostly at Goldman, also Morgan Stanley and UBS. And then I left, started modeling soccer for you guys from a mathematical perspective, and then left the city to move into sports betting. So creating new algorithms to price up and trade sports in real time, predominantly soccer, but also cricket. We built out a B2B business using those algorithms to supply bookmakers with real time prices and new innovative products like bet builders, for example, or, you know, single match parlays, I think is probably the terminology that is in existence in the US. We were acquired by our biggest customer, and I spent the last 5-6 years helping to grow that business from a small European national champion in Eastern Europe to a global business today. I ran M&A, corporate development, and the on-balance sheet venture fund that we set up for the last couple of years as well. But we ended up in a very big business, and I found Bitcoin along the way in 2020. And so, you know, I'm at a point now where fortunately I've been able to take a step out of that business earlier last year and focus entirely on Bitcoin, because there is just nothing else worth working on. There is no second best focus. It's probably a good way to put it. And so it led me to creating this presentation, but through chance rather than forward planning. I mean, you know, maybe we can dig into that a little bit as well. And I just, you know, I've been blown away by the reception it's had since I released it. I was just hoping somebody would watch it, but it seems to have really tapped into something, I would say, and sort of a missing piece in the educational ecosystem that we have within Bitcoin.
Well, Joe, it looks like you just released it, correct? It looks like it's only a couple weeks old. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, that's right. I released it on the 7th. And brand new YouTube. I've never published anything. Brand new YouTube account. Brand new Twitter account for this, which is Sats versus Fiat. And my Twitter account only had about 500 people. I was very much in the background as opposed to, you know, being known for anything within Bitcoin. And so, the last 2 weeks have been a bit of a like trying to drink out of a fire hose, I would say. Just with the amount of interactions, the amount of emails from Bitcoiners all over the world, who, you know, have seen this and, you know, I found it helpful for orange pilling the people around me.
So Joe, it looks like we have a hand, but before we go to that hand, can you just tell us a little bit about the origins of this presentation? Did you create it? It sounds like the video describes it as creating it for a local group. Can you just talk a little bit about that before you turned it into the massive success video that you have?
Yeah. Well, I just got invited for a weekend away with a friend who lives in Portugal. He's an American guy. And he decided to do, you know, a weekend where he invites friends from his life to go and, you know, spend a couple of days with him in Portugal, and we'll just hang out, and everyone brings something to talk about, and we'll, you know, we'll learn a lot over a couple of days and do some exercise and, you know, just, you know, something different. And so the only thing I wanted to talk about was Bitcoin. But I didn't know anybody else going. So, you know, it was the first time I'd ever been forced to commit any thoughts to paper, in trying to explain Bitcoin in some way to somebody else. And I think, you know, most of us are like that. You know, we carry around this jumble of things in our heads, but we're never actually forced to put it down on paper or try and articulate it in a way which we think is accessible to people. And so I had 30 minutes. And I sort of thought, well, what is the goal for 30 minutes? It's not going to be to teach people about Bitcoin because I don't know where they're starting, you know, whether they know it already or they've never heard of it. And so I reduced my goal to, after 30 minutes, I want them to want to learn about Bitcoin. And so from that basis, I sort of reframed what I was planning to do is just to talk about what's the problem, and then try to walk the group from a position of knowing nothing about anything, just being a human being with some life experience, through to within 30 minutes realizing that the broken money is corroding our entire society, and that the solution is Bitcoin, and that they need to go and learn about Bitcoin. And so Bitcoin is only mentioned, you know, on the last slide of the entire presentation, and I gave it, and the reception was amazing. I knew the presentation was good because I spent so much time on it and thought about it, but they then just encouraged me, so you need to show this to more people. So I spent another few weeks improving it, giving it to small groups or one-on-ones with different types of people, Bitcoiners, non-Bitcoiners, young, old, male, female, and then booked a slot in a little local studio and went and did it a couple of times. And, you know, looking back, I should have written a script for it rather than just sort of freestyling it. But I think it seems to have gone okay.
Well, it flows really good without a script. I'm pretty impressed that you did that without a script then. Because it flows. You don't talk over. You don't repeat a lot of the same points. Again, I was really impressed with it, and it was just, the biggest thing is that it's short. Like all the other ones, that it's long and your mind can start wandering, or at least I find it with me.
Yeah.
With this one, you had it, and you had the slides, and you just kind of kept going back. So I found it really informational. Joe, again, I was really impressed with it.
Oh, well, thank you very much. There's a couple of the two different edits there. It's sort of two different versions that are sewn together, you know, in a very good way by the production company. So, you know, they've done a great job. But the overall idea of it was to get somebody to the starting line and be motivated to get that first book or podcast or video about Bitcoin. And so it seems to be pretty effective. But it's through the mechanism of the story. For those of you who haven't seen it, it's a story which is, you know, tricky with content because, you know, you're painting the world in a very dark way, but it's wrapped up in sort of soft Pixar characters through. And so, it ends up not being that heavy, but the viewer steps through from, you know, zero through, you know, a logical sequence of steps which they themselves are sort of evaluating at each stage, and they begin to see throughout the story that a natural consequence of a series of steps ends up pretty much with the world we have today. But it all flows from broken money as the starting point. So we can dig into the story a little bit more as well, if that's helpful, but you know, open to questions.
Well, before we start.
Yeah, it looks like we have a hand.
Yep, go ahead. I was going to say, yeah, before we start getting to the questions, I just want to make sure everyone knows there is a link to the video up in the Nest. It's right up there. So if you, after the show, just go ahead and click on that and it'll take you right to, the video. I think you had your hand up first, so go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I actually just watched the video this morning. And then I was about halfway through before I started sending it to, you know, my not quite orange pilled family members. Because while I'll ramble, I think that really did a great job of, you know, getting to the point and, you know, explaining it in a way that was simple for, you know, people that are mostly uninitiated and unaware of the problem. It was just very well done, like very clean and easy to understand. So, really great job, putting that together, Joe. And, I just want to point out, like, it's interesting how often, you know, we'll often talk a lot of Bitcoiners will talk about, like, you know, doing things at the smaller and like local level and all that. And I just want to point out that, like, you know, you said you started this for a small group and, you know, it's obviously had a much larger reach now and larger impact. And I think that's true for, you know, a lot of things, you know, so if you have, you know, this small, you know, you think it's a local problem. But you know, if you put it down, if you put some effort into it and some work into it and share it outwardly, you know, you could be surprised by, how many people will, it could resonate with, you know? I don't think there's ever too many people like in this space. I think it's, you know, everybody speaks a little bit differently and can reach a different audience than somebody else. So, I think the more people in here doing something, is overall better. So, just want to say really great job on the video. Really, really found it interesting. And, you know, while you say it painted a dark picture, like the characters and stuff and the soft tone, I think, you know, made it something that like, I don't think my kids would be terrified of if I had them watch it. So.
Okay, good. Well, firstly, thank you for taking the time to watch it and for then sharing it with people. You're right. You know, the Bitcoin community is not massive. And you know, there's lots of things that we can create ourselves and small actions that we take each day, whether it, you know, be telling someone about Bitcoin or trying to spend Bitcoin or, you know, supporting somebody creating something on Bitcoin, which can help overall. And one thing I have noticed is the level of support from the entire community has just been amazing. Like the number of, you know, emails from, you know, all corners of the world, you know, giving, you know, feedback on the video and also offering to help has been amazing. It's been amazing. So, you know, thank you for the sharing. Please continue to do so. I would love everyone to have it in their pocket as their go-to video when they think someone is ready to hear about what is wrong. And so, you know, we send, you know, everyone has their, you know, go-to podcast or video or, you know, book that they recommend to people. For me, it was, you know, then Bitcoin Standard or, you know, Lynn Alden's fantastic broken money video or, you know, Rothbard's, you know, what have the government done to our money, depending on, you know, the type of person I was talking to. But, you know, the take up is always quite hard because they need to be motivated to actually read those things and engage with them because, you know, they're not easy. They're not easy things. And so, you know, where this video seems to be slotting in is, you know, first in the chain before those. So people are sharing this video with their family members. And then the family member says, okay, can you tell me a bit more about Bitcoin? And now they've got a reason to learn about it. And then you send the book or the video or the podcast. And, you know, I hope you get the same reaction to you from your friends and family who are on the verge of being orange pilled but aren't quite there yet. So thank you.
Yeah, it's outstanding. We do have another hand. Dips Tips, do you want to ask Joe a question?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
I did.
Okay. So, thank you for giving me mic. I come from Argentina. I'm now in Argentina. As an Argentinian, I want to thank Joe Bryan for his 39-minute gem. It's very helpful to evangelize and educate so many people that are in the trench of inflation, fighting the daily food stamp war. So here we do, as Javier Milei, our president, says, we do come from the future. We made in Argentina the money printing counterfeiting the leitmotif of our state. So we do understand now, making a U-turn, making the first surplus in 124 years without being in default of our debt paying. So this is a very 180-degree U-turn. So we do understand that fix the money, fix Argentina, fix the world, separate state from money is very important. We don't get that yet here, but we are making the peso, the Argentinian peso, a much harder sound money than before because we have technically shut down the central bank. But the whole scope of Joe's video is perfect because it appeals to all the infection that the fiat octopus makes in our nutrition, in our food, in our education, in our kids' psychology, all the leftist ideas that went too wrong with the pendulum now coming to some common sense. And Joe's voice, in his calmness and in his neutral way of political understanding of this, just the money is broken, it's very helpful. So you can appeal to both right, left, center, and I do think that Bitcoin is not just the perfect money for me by studying it a lot and doing the full right hold deep, the full deep pool. I understand it not just a monetary system, but a sound thermodynamic security system for the digital realm. I do understand that proof of work is the perfect innovation for this. And it reproduces the biological and like kinetic power projection game theory that Jason Lurie stands to make the cost benefit ratio higher to be attacked. So that makes something analogical being birthed in the digital realm, being scarce, open source, permissionless and trustless. This is like a gift from heaven. So I do appreciate Joe coming to terms and making this perfect gem of 30-40 minutes that I'm using a lot with all friends, family, and the community that I talk to, most of libertarian Argentinian people, but also from Europe. And I'm so glad to speak to you. I want to thank you. I'm honored of speaking with you. And I'm glad that you keep on pushing this agenda because this agenda makes everyone better and every nation more truthful. So thank you. And my only question could be that if you know the theory that the Jason Lurie stands becoming the Bitcoin, not just a monetary system, but a security system in itself. So thanks.
Thank you, Dips Tips. I'm glad, I'm so happy in fact that, you see such value in it, and, please continue to share it. We've got it translated now into, I think, 20 languages. And these translations have been through native Bitcoin volunteers, native speakers who are Bitcoiners all around the world. who have spent their own time with no payment at all, you know, translating these things as quickly as they can to try and get them out on YouTube. So we've got subtitles there for everybody. And, you know, if you're a native speaker or know a native speaker who's a Bitcoiner, and it's not a language covered and you would like to help out, then, you know, please just reach out by the website as well. And, you know, on your question about Jason Lowry, I've got one of the copies of his book before it was pulled by the Defense Department. And so, yeah, he is, I understand why I sort of read between the lines that he's now back helping advising the government in some way, I suspect. And, you know, it's, today is a big day for, the US and, you know, hopefully a resetting of the general direction of the world, in terms of, I don't want to get political. The presentation itself, as you said, I intentionally kept it apolitical because the fact that we have money printing is an issue for all governments, regardless of their type. It's left, right, center, big, small. They all do it. So it really doesn't matter. And everything is downstream of that money printing. So, I think by keeping it as apolitical as possible, you can send it to your friends who are left, right, libertarian, or any other shade of a political spectrum, and they can all engage with it in some way and find some hook in there which helps them understand, you know, what the real cancer is at the heart of this system. So we can start talking about the things that really do matter the most. If we fix that, we'll fix the rest.
So Joe, your video, I know we only got a few minutes left with you, but your video obviously discusses a lot of the problems, right? You couldn't do all of them. But with, you kind of mentioned it here, with Trump's inauguration, we're going to see the pendulum swing a little bit on everything from food, health crisis, wars, et cetera. Like, we don't know exactly what it's going to look like. But do you think that this slows down the government needing to press that red button, or have you kind of thought about that?
Well, I mean, you've got a caveat this with, I'm absolutely not an expert on US politics or politics in general, but, you know, the US sets the tone for the rest of the world. And the change today very much flies in the face of the general direction of travel that the world has had for the last sort of 10 years, especially in Europe. And dragging things back to more normalcy, I would say. That said, you know, they still have access to the big red button. And for people who haven't seen the video, the essence is that there's an island and it splits in two. And on one side, you've got Satoshi, who has perfect money. And on the other side, you've got Fiatello, who starts with perfect money, but he also has a big red button that he promises never to press and change any aspect of the perfect money. But then inevitably human nature takes over and he presses it just once to print some extra money, and then things spiral very quickly out of control. And, you know, the government still have the big red button. Whether they are Democrat or Republican, they have it and they will press it. And you have Musk and the Doge endeavors to try and balance the budget, but they can't fix the problem. I don't know, there'd be struggle to even balance the budget. And you can see some of these figures in the presentation. It puts it in a sense of scale. But we know when something goes wrong, they'll just print more money. The only solution is to remove the big red button from their hands completely. And I just, you know, I would love to think that that's on the table for the next 4 years, but I don't think that's the case. I think it's much more likely that the US recognizes, especially, you know, Jason Lowry and the US administration now having some very seasoned and very seasoned Bitcoiners involved, like RFK and, you know, Vivek and several others, that they recognize Bitcoin for the solution it is. But for governments, it, I think, first and foremost will be a solvency solution. Because no government, I think, is willingly going to give up access to that big red button. But when you're in a position to print as much as you want of your own currency to buy the only thing in the universe, which is is absolutely scarce, then it's the logical rationale to do that. And, you know, game theory plays out, and whoever does that first, whoever does that biggest, is going to set themselves up for long-term prosperity, and force everyone else to participate. And so, you know, the greatest trade that Trump can do is print the dollar to buy Bitcoin, and make America solvent again. Which would strengthen the dollar. It wouldn't remove the dollar, but it would strengthen the dollar and put the US back firmly in number one position globally. And you know, my personal view is that he will focus on his legacy. And you know, if I was him, I would want to go down, and I suspect this is what he thinks. He wants to go down as the greatest president ever. And so, you know, he'll be looking at those milestone achievements of what he can deliver during his term. And it probably includes a man on Mars and, you know, hosting the Olympics and the Football World Cup. But it also probably means doing the greatest trade ever in history, which is printing the dollar to buy Bitcoin and driving Bitcoin through the roof. And deleveraging the massive hole that the US finds itself in today financially, by effectively recollateralizing itself through Bitcoin. That is the greatest trade ever to do. And, you know, he could make some serious inroads if he does it properly. At least that's how I would think about things. People would obviously have a very different view on some of that.
Yo, I think, I know we're coming up to the time. I just want to make a comment. I think one of the things that I've learned from your presentation and then just hearing you talk about it again today is just the simplicity in which you deliver this story. And so, what I'm curious about is, you know, it looks like you have an engineering background, but there was some creativity here with this, this video. For those that haven't seen it, Joe was kind of describing it related to, Fiatello and Satoshi. And so, Joe, was that in the initial presentation, the creative part, or did that just come from when you went into the studio?
It was in the initial part. I mean, I can stay for 10 more minutes here, guys. So, slightly less rushed than I expected before. So, but yeah, thankfully with the advances in AI, I was able just to use Midjourney to, you know, spend a few hours and try and craft the characters that I wanted to represent the people in story. And yeah, it's sort of try and boil it down to some key things that people can, simplified messages that people can latch onto. So, you know, it's possible you've already seen people mentioning Fiatello or Fiatellos on X, you know, and people are now starting to use that a little bit to just represent the people in charge of the money or just currency in general. You know, oh, they're printing more Fiatellos, or Fiatello's doing this, or don't be a Fiatello. Like, and it just simplifies the whole, represents the people who have access to the money printer, and the money printer about, you know, simplifying the way that we think about money creation, you know, and at the next stage, you really drill into that when you look, when you watch Lynn Alden's video of Broken Money, and then you go and read the book, and you really understand what the different aspects of money creation look like with, you know, fractional reserve banking and debt and debt-based economies. But to simplify it to everybody, it's just they've got a big red button. And every time they want to print some money, they just hit the big red button. And you sort of abstract away behind the scenes the complexities, because people don't need the complexities at the first touch point. In their mind, they've got this structure, right? There's this guy called Fiatello. He presses the big red button and prints money. And then that causes all the problems I see around me today. And so it's a much more accessible sort of mental model for interpreting the world. And gives them a gateway then to drill into it in more detail if they need to. But that softer Pixar, you know, wrapping just makes it easier for everybody, I think.
Yeah, I showed it to my kids, and I've also shown it to some boomers that I've had trouble orange pilling, and it really is digestible and concise, and I think it's great how you softened it. We got another question from you, Omar. Go ahead.
Yeah, a couple things. First is, before you, because I know you said you got only about 10 more minutes, so I just want to ask, are you also on Nostra, and if you are, what's your MPub, if you could share that with us, so we can follow you on there as well?
Oh, I'm on Nostra. Oh, yeah, sorry, Omar. I'm on Nostra with the same usernames. So at SatMojo, and that's me personally, and at Sats versus Fiat, which is where the video lives, and also where drive directly to where the video lives on the website. It's obviously embedded on YouTube, but there's a Sats versus Fiat website where you can go volunteer if you want to get involved with helping us get this to in the hands of everybody around the world. Or if you are new to Bitcoin or know somebody who's new to Bitcoin, wants to learn a bit more, then go there. And then there's the selection of you know, accessible videos covering different aspects of Bitcoin. So really easy sort of getting up and running. So you find something that might be interesting and some books. And also if, you know, we would love to be able to build a community here where we can go and give presentations in real life for this presentation, whether it be me or volunteers around the world in different countries, to people who would like to see it, whether it be schools, universities, or, you know, industry events in normal world as well, you know, etc. So, you know, you can access the website and you can find us on Twitter, X or Nostra, both under the same handles. But we're, I must admit, I push some stuff out on Nostra, but it's much, much smaller than X.
Yeah, understandable. I'm slow on Nostra still too. I'm just starting to pick up more on there. So, but I like to push people there for when I potentially get banned from other platforms. So it's good to have a backup.
It's good to have a head. Yeah.
And then, my next question was just, do you have plans for more videos? Like, do you have like an idea of where, like what message you want to carry next? Like, will you,
I really don't in terms of videos. I think the challenge is trying to get this seen by every pair of eyeballs in the world. Because I think if everybody sees the video, they have the mental framework to understand why they should care about Bitcoin. And if everybody sees it in the world, everyone gets that first touch point with Bitcoin, and they have a mental framework in which to make that next step. And we've all been there. And we know once you do that, the inevitable outcome is that you realize there is no second best. This thing is going to fix the world. And so, you know, I should try and set that up in the best way I can and try and get that ball rolling down the hill with as many people who want to come and help me do that as possible. But I should say this, my work here is not a commercial thing in any way. It's purely charitable. So, yeah, just make that very clear. Like, this is an accidental creation, which I'm hoping will be sort of morph into community involvement to drive it forward. And my real focus is wanting to, you know, build out a Bitcoin business, which I'm sort of working on in the background, which is totally unconnected.
Nice. I think you're like a step away from making a children's book for sound money, and then we can use like children's story Inception on the parents to orange pill them. So yeah, maybe it's just the Pixar characters in the video that just put my mind right into that mindset. But I feel like all you need is a little hero tale at the end for I forget what you call him.
Fiatello.
Fiatello, yeah.
Fiatello.
Yeah. You just need a hero story for how Fiatello is rescued from himself. And I think you got a nice little children's book there.
Yeah, well, he does find Bitcoin at the end, which is nice. But I'm very open if people have skills in those areas or want to run with this to get in touch. I'm making all the material open to everybody. So we are Obviously, we've done the translations on the YouTube video. We are translating the presentation into lots of languages as well. So we've done Spanish so far, and then the rest will follow. We've done Spanish because we're trying to create an AI version of this where I'm speaking Spanish and the slides are in Spanish. And if we can do that, then perhaps we can do that for every language. And then open source the slides, the speaker notes, the material, and all the videos on the website. So people can self-serve, go and give presentations to their friends, families, co-workers, wherever. And, you know, remix it into other content, maybe books or, I don't know, little children's videos or something like that. It'd be wonderful to see.
Well, you definitely have a talent, so I would definitely keep trying to pursue it. It's a very easy to watch video. And again, I like it that it's short, it's concise, so your mind doesn't have a chance to wander. And it's great. And in case anybody missed it, it's sats versus fiat.com is the website to go to. And there's tons of information on books and other videos to watch that Joe's put out there. Joe's, do you have a hard stop at, I guess, in 2 or 3 minutes?
I do, 2 or 3 minutes. I have to go and travel for the children. But, you know, thank you very much for inviting me. I'm delighted to come and talk to you guys and the people that are interested to hear about this. And, you know, if you haven't seen the video already, then, you know, I would love it if you watched, and if you like it, let me know. And please do share it with just everybody you care about. Cause it's, you know, it seems to be unlocking relationships as well as, you know, orange pilling people. I've lost track of the number of messages I've had from people. Like, I've been trying to get my dad to understand Bitcoin, or want to understand Bitcoin, for 3 years. And I sent him this video, and now he's asking me for the Bitcoin standard. Or, you know, I've just had the best conversation I've ever had with my teenage daughter because she's watched the video and now she understands why I care about this stuff so much. Like, those sorts of things are just amazing. And to think that the video helps unlock those things for some people is wonderful. So please share it liberally, and, you know, let me know if you want to get involved.
Joe, thanks so much for being here. We're going to continue on with the news, but wanted to make sure everybody gives Joe a follow and also, yeah, share his video. It's pretty incredible. I think it's great for just, it's simple. And, you know, we all talk about people going down the rabbit hole. Or the orange, you know, trying to orange pill people, but this is really just something that is concise, puts it all together, and I think really speeds up people's understanding of really what the problem is and why, yeah, like Joe said with his daughter, like why he's so passionate about the solution.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, guys. I will take my leave now, and hopefully see you on a future space.
Thank you, Joe.
All right. Take care. Bye now.
Take care. You know, it's a great video. Go give Joe a follow. Go retweet that video. Let's get some more people. Again, everyone's entry point at Bitcoin is different. Everyone has a different trigger, that gets them going down the rabbit hole. And this might be that video for them. So at the very least, it doesn't take any time at all. Just go give them a follow and retweet it, so it gets some tractions, and maybe can help orange pill a couple new people. Really quick though, before we start diving into the news, I want to give a quick thank you to our partners, Black Sheep Ammo. Restock your ammo at blacksheepammo.com. Punch Plate, stamp your seed phrase on a metal plate, punchplate.com. Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms and tactical training at paladintowertactics.com. And Solo Satoshi, open source Bitcoin mining at solosatoshi.com. Use the code BTCVETS for 5% off. In Bitcoin, you get an additional 10% off, so potential for 15% off your order, solosatoshi.com. Bitcoin Alaska, you hear me talk about it every single show. It's going to be an amazing conference. This conference is not going to be like any others you've attended. This is a family-friendly event. Bring your spouse, bring your kids, bring your in-laws. It's going to be great. July 5th and 6th. pre-conference activities take place on the 1st. So get there early. Get your tickets and lodging, bitcoinalaska.org. And up in the nest, there was a link for Cold Car. Again, we don't know what's going to happen this week. The price of Bitcoin could absolutely rip. You don't want to leave your Bitcoin on an exchange. Go click the link up there and secure your Bitcoin with a Cold Card. Use the MK4 or the Q and you'll be set for life. So Bob, Ilmar, I'm going to go ahead and throw it to you guys. What do you want to talk about first? Do you want to talk about Trump's coin that he launched and the multiple coins he launched over the weekend? You want to get into predictions for this week? Talk about the pardons that Biden did last night? Which direction do you want to start off with?
Well, I believe the rule is no shit coining here. So I think that about sums up what we have to say about the Trump coin. So.
Sure. Size. I like that. Yeah. For those of you who might be living underneath a rock, Trump launched multiple shit coins over the weekend, with a 90% pre-mine. So only 10% was made to the public. This is why we don't shitcoin. Bitcoin only, proof of work. It's unfortunate. And, you know, again, he should know better. He's got a lot of Bitcoiners in his circle that should have been able to steer from it. But Trump loves to put his name on everything. So it's just, it's unfortunate. I hope a lot of people don't get rugged. I don't see that not being the case, though. Bitcoin only. So let's go ahead.
I mean, he even called it a meme coin, which is like, and, you know, he wrote, let's have fun. Like he wrote it in a way that, you know, trying to protect himself legally, I think that like it is just for fun and a joke and not like financial investment, but people still, you know, I'm sure there's people out there that thought that that was the SBR, you know what I mean? Because that's how, uneducated a lot of people are in this space. So it's unfortunate. I'm sure there's going to be some lawsuits in the tail end. It's just going to be noise and distraction. So.
Yeah, I think there could be broader implications here too. Some people have pointed out that, you know, this was done and launched as Gensler's going out of the SEC. And so maybe, there could be some good things that come out of this. But if you put your money in it, you're going to get wrecked. So we'll see. I mean, I think maybe it's symbolic. Maybe it's something that, you know, shows everyone that things are going to change and in a big way. Deregulation, I think, might be the message. And, that's not just for cryptocurrency. I think it's in a lot of areas. So I think we all expect and know change is coming. So I'll be the one to say, hey, maybe this is positive, overall, unless you get rugged.
I'll agree with you, Bob. I think it's positive overall. You have this with all the shenanigans that are going to take place, all the meme coins, all the altcoins, we'll call them what they are, all the shit coins are going to proliferate for the next 4 years. This is just the repercussions of Trump winning. If we would have had a Kamala victory, again, it would have been a lot different. I really don't think Bitcoin still would have made a new all-time high. It would have kept going higher, but it would have been a lot slower. I think the potential for just to completely blow up is going to be a lot different underneath this administration versus the Harris. So again, you have to kind of pick and choose. Again, there's always going to be cons with every choice, and this is just one of those. So,
yeah, at the very least, he's now got skin in the game for deregulating, so he isn't subject to lawsuits. So.
Yeah, or just at the very least regulation, like just get it written down, get everybody on the same page and then go from there.
Hey, Coleman, do you want to try to bring Shane up? He's requested. I can't approve him. It won't let me.
Yeah, I'll take care of it right now. Sorry, Shane.
While you're working on that, I'll just say that you know, the first stages of the ceasefire deal in Gaza have been implemented. You know, Netanyahu was reportedly trying to weasel out of the deal. You know, saying like there were some changes and blah, blah, blah. And it seems that, Trump's envoy there, Wyckoff, but apparently he said, you know, just shut up and take the deal. And, you know, the first prisoner exchanges have, occurred and, you know, things, I saw some tweets last night about, like, you know, the first night in Gaza without bombs. So, I mean, you know, take a look at the devastation and stuff there. You know, the people there are in no way out of the woods. There's still plenty of ways that our government and the Israeli government can screw them over further. You know, even best case scenario, and, you know, there are a lot of, like, really, like, good signs that I'm honestly surprised by. Like, Wyckoff, the envoy again, was talking about how he wants to go to Gaza to see. And, you know, they talked about, you know, he's like, I don't want to just hear the Israeli side. I want to see, like, or the, he said, I don't want to hear the Israeli side or the Palestinian side. I want to see what's going on there. And, you know, that's just such a huge departure from, you know, like, the weasels that we've had in the last administration, like, Blinken and Miller, you know, just to, you know, acknowledge that there's another side is, a huge thing. Sadly, it's a huge, huge departure from the last administration. So there's some good signals there. But, you know, again, I pitched it last time and sorry for hijacking for, you know, unrelated nonprofits. But if you, you know, if you feel you want to help, there's a PCRF, Palestinian Children's Relief Fund, and, Heal Palestine, both of which were founded by Steve Sosaby, who does some really good work. So if you donate there, you'll know that, you know, your money's going to a good cause. I know it's tough because there's a lot of people reaching out directly with GoFundMes and stuff, but it's really hard to keep track of what's legitimate and what's, you know, just some scammer. So I always advocate, you know, going through organizations. Yeah, there's some cost overhead, but at least, you know, especially ones like the two that I mentioned, they're definitely doing good work on the ground.
Shane, did you have anything you wanted to say, sir?
No, good morning. I dropped out there for a second. I didn't hear any of the questions. I just wanted to say good morning, and I'll kind of roll into this as it comes back up. But, yeah, my connection was a little bit iffy here and there.
Yeah, no worries, no worries. All right, let's get a little poll here. I think this is the easiest thing for Trump to do. And it'll be the best good faith move that he'll do for the Bitcoin side of things. Does he free Ross today?
I think it happens this week for sure. I'd be shocked because there's this expectation based on promises, right? And so I think he'll get it done.
Yeah, I really hope it is today. You know, it's such a simple thing to do. And it'll gain him a lot of credibility. You know, it'll help repair the credibility that he lost with his shitcoins. If he frees Ross on day one. So I think it's a no brainer. Like, it's so simple for him to do. It's literally signing a piece of paper and it's done. So I really hope it does. And if it's not in the first week, then that, you know, is to me like a betrayal of his word, because there's no excuse for a whole week of not freeing Ross. Cause again, it is so simple to do. There's no reason not to. I did read that, I think it was Unusual Whales maybe that posted something that he's got a plan for like 200 executive orders in the first day or something. So hopefully it's in that list of things.
Yeah. To EMR's point there, he does have a stack. And so I would imagine if Ross Ulbricht's pardon or clemency in this case is not in that stack of executive orders, he's obviously, you know, betrayed a lot of what he said. But this is going to be the broader narrative, right? Is today is pretty important. Like, if there is a stack of 200, we don't see that. We don't see some really big things out of the Trump administration in terms of, you know, the geopolitical scene, the energy sector. You know, this first 1 to 10 days, I think, is going to be very telling, including possibly even arrest. And then the first 100 days, you know, working with, you know, the Congress and the Senate out there trying to move legislation through to either, you know, take things off of the books or, you know, put things into the books that, you know, in terms of needing protection. But this, you know, as much as I want to cross my fingers and hope, I think this is the time where people should be even more cynical of this government and President Trump, the Congress, the Senate, this is not the time to, you know, relax and lay back and watch happen. This is the time to push as hard as you can on X and Noster and the rest of these, because, you know, obviously the whole shitcoinery thing, you know, I was going to weigh in a little bit earlier on this, but that piece to me was one of those that I kind of took the negative side is if he screws a bunch of people coming into office and, you know, this is, you know, an optics game and he doesn't know what he's talking about. He's launching meme coins out there that are going to rug people for possibly millions of dollars. You know, that could have this effect where, you know, people are like, man, he doesn't understand, you know, quote unquote crypto. He just rugged a whole bunch of people. And that could be a, you know, a bad thing in terms of the optics for Bitcoin for at least the immediate future until people, you know, kind of catch up.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm cautiously optimistic because of just the speed that he was able to push for stuff in Gaza. Like it really, you know, it brightened my lens on what's to come. You know, I still, again, I said cautiously optimistic because there's still plenty of stuff he can screw up. I had written back when he was first elected an article that kind of summarized some of the promises and stuff that he's given to us. And it goes over like what we might be able to expect. So I posted that to the Nest. If people are fuzzy on some of the details, you know, you can give that a look and see through some of the things. Like, you know, outside of the crypto space, I really hope that there's some movement on, you know, like Second Amendment protections. I know Massey has a constitutional carry bill out there. I think there was just a bill introduced for the Hearing Protection Act, I think somebody pushed through, which I think is to deregulate silencers, which is a no-brainer. And you know, there's a list of good things that can be done, and there's a list of things that he said that I don't know how he'll do. But I go over a lot of that stuff in that article up there. It was written, like I said, it was written back in November, I think. So some of it might be a little dated or answered already. So,
you know, Martin, Shane, maybe even Coleman, you know, it's kind of, for me, like super just striking that, this ceasefire actually gets done well ahead of the inauguration. Like it just, to me, it seems like, you know, it's clear that the previous administration was just using it, you know, as a way to enrich, defense contractors and probably other political allies. Just curious if anybody has that thought too, like why didn't this take any time at all? It was like before it even should have happened.
Well, I think there's a few things there, right? Like there's the reality that, and there's like some Israeli papers that have published it since then, but I wrote a few times about the supply chain issues that Israel's facing and by extension, the United States, right? Like some of our supplies are so tapped that it's going to take decades to reload them. So if you're America first, you can't support this to continue. Because if it does continue, like the peace isn't going to be maintained. Like Hezbollah wasn't destroyed. It was damaged, but it wasn't destroyed. And then you still have Iran there. So like the draw on our resources is extreme. And in 2022, we were facing challenges and, there was reports from think tanks that said we'd run out of munitions in 7 days, or less than 7 days if China invaded Taiwan. So now we're probably, I don't know what we're at, but say we're at 2 days now. It's, you know, we're turning ourselves into a paper tiger on behalf of a foreign nation. And it's, they're actually not gaining anything from it either. You know, their position is weakened in the world significantly, because of their choices. And I cover that in some of my articles too, but I'm not going to pollute the nest there. And then the other thing, and this is maybe we should put on our tinfoil hats for this one, but, we saw back in, I think October, Jeremy Lofredo, was reporting from Gray Zone. He was reporting in Israel. He went to Tel Aviv and he went near a spot where a single Iranian missile had landed, when most of them landed in the Nevatim Air Force Base in the desert there. And the reason I bring that up is because 2 days before the ceasefire was announced, Saudi Arabia announced that they were going to start enriching uranium. And previously they said they would only do that if Iran had nuclear weapons. So the tinfoil hat conspiracy I have there is that Iran has nuclear weapons and we had that intel. And we went over there and laid that out for them. And you know, that changes the conversation dramatically. And, you know, it puts context that lone missile that struck in the center of Tel Aviv, you know, it's saying like, look where we can hit you. And then, you know, the back channel saying, look what we have. And I don't know if you guys remember, but there was reports of like, unusual earthquake, unusual seismic events in Iran, a couple months ago as well. So, I mean, if I'm putting together the pieces, and especially like just the timing, the fact that Saudi Arabia, who we share a lot of intelligence with, announces they're enriching uranium. And then a couple days later, we magically get this ceasefire agreement. To me, that says that Iran has nukes. We know they have nukes. Like, they probably told us, like, stop this before we have to do something drastic, you know? That's my take on it. I think it's all those things combined.
Yeah, I'd add as well, over, I think it was Friday, Russia and Iran had officially signed another 20-year strategic partnership agreement so that they can mutually assure security in their own countries. So when you look at this, and this is a new development, obviously we know this going into, you know, understanding that, hey, guys, there's got to be a ceasefire here. You've got Russia and Iran. Russia's obviously the most nuclear-capable state on the planet, and if they are securing, you know, strategic partnerships with Iran in the region right now, yeah, for sure they have nukes. Like, if they don't have nukes, they're going to have nukes, and they're going to have, you know, really good Russian nukes. Like, this is, you know, on a hypersonic missile, no less. So when we look at, you know, hey, the ceasefire has got to start. Yeah, you can wipe out, you know, Hamas and Hezbollah, which, let's face it, were funded by money coming from the U.S. through their proxy Israel in that region anyway. And I think, you know, the big story here is the Israel's position in the world. It's not that, you know, the Palestinians won, but Israel has definitely lost. The sentiment around Israel in the, you know, around the world at this point has just dropped to an all-time low. You know, people have seen with their own eyes what this is, and if they aren't, you know, either indoctrinated or paid off, or you know, part of the Israeli, you know, state, then this all kind of makes sense. So I think this was more or less the inevitable. Iran being the crown jewel of the region, and that crown jewel is now off the table because Russia, I probably guess that, you know, China is going to be backing them up as well.
Yeah. And we saw like the impact that has, right? Cause Russia rushed over some S-400s, prior to Israel's second counter or attack. And, it fell very flat. I think four people were killed, from an errant missile. But there was no real significant damage compared to the first strike where they only had the S-300s. They were able to hit some of the radar facilities and stuff like that. And then, just in terms of like who won and who lost, like, you know, the human loss on the Palestinian side is just immeasurable, you know, literally immeasurable. We don't even know right now. But you know, based on the Lancet, it's up to the hundreds of thousands. But in terms of like strategically and militarily, I wrote about this in, I think it was in my article, American Victory. I referenced like the Tet Offensive, right? Like the North Vietnamese technically lost that, right? But what came out of that was a lot of footage of the fighting. There's a lot of embedded journalists and stuff like that. There was, a lot of famous photos and stuff that came out of that, just showing like the horrors of the war that we were fighting there. And like how much like the people there were suffering because of it. And, ultimately that helped, end that war because it shifted, is one of the things that helped shift U.S. support. So I think it's something similar there. Like whether or not you classify it as a victory, it 100% was a defeat of Israel. You know, like it's hard to say victory when so many people lost their lives on the Palestinian side, but it was definitely a defeat of Israel. And just objectively, like they had stated goals that Hamas would be destroyed. Hamas in uniform was handing over the prisoners and re-implemented like above ground policing as soon as the ceasefire was enacted. So, you know, I think that kind of flies in the face of a lot of things. And then just the global damage that was done to our image as well, both from a strength and from a mission perspective. You know, Yemen stood up to us this entire time, stood up to the entire force of the U.S. Navy. And they were still striking up till the ceasefire and until Israel stopped launching bombs. Yemen was still launching missiles into Israel. So, you know, it's not a good look for the global empire of the United States, on a lot of levels.
Yeah, that's really good stuff. I think we're coming up to the top of the hour. Coleman, we got plenty of other things to talk about if we want to extend the show. Otherwise, yeah, we're at the top of the hour already. It's a fast show.
Yeah, I'm good to keep going. Just so everybody knows, that there's a pretty big snowstorm that's going to hit Houston. Anytime there's any chance of snow, the city kind of shuts down. But the amount of snow that they're calling for the next 24 hours is pretty significant for this part of the area. And I'm not really sure what's going to happen with tomorrow's show. We have Bob Burnett of Barefoot Mining going to be joining us. I should be able to get reception on my phone so I can drive to a remote spot. So I myself, Coleman, might not be on here, but the Bitcoin Veterans Handle will. So we can still launch it. And Bob, Yomar, and Shane, if you guys are up here, I'll try and get you to help out with that. But it'll be really good. I really want to pick Bob's brain tomorrow. If we do get a strategic Bitcoin reserve announcement, the implications of that and how mining is such an integral part of the new policy. And so this is actually a pretty good segue. Trump had mentioned that he's going to declare a national energy emergency. And so it started putting a lot of energy and focus into building up our energy country. And I just look at who he had over the weekend at the inaugurations there. Fred Thiel of Mara Holdings was sitting down at vice president's table. And again, I don't think that's just a coincidence. I do think that they see, you remove all of the shit coins going on and all the crap that Trump just did over the weekend. I do think that they see there is a huge opportunity here to seize this and to go ahead and implement this. So let's go ahead and we can talk about this a little bit, or we can go into other things. I still have time.
I got to drop because it actually snowed here today and my kids are getting restless. They want to go play in the snow. So thanks for the space, and I will hopefully see you tomorrow.
Yeah, later, Eddie. Stay warm. But Shane, Bob, BitPetro, do you guys have any thoughts on the, you know, Mara and the energy crisis and just kind of how that might play out?
I'll defer to BitPetro. He's the guy. Let's hear it.
Look, energy crisis is more of a, I think, internal crisis. I don't think that's an external crisis. We obviously have all the gas we could ever want. And it's a matter of policy whether we're going to unlock it or not. The drill baby drill thing is I think a little bit misplaced. Because if we're not going after offshore or Arctic assets or shit, Venezuela, I dare say, like that's it. The shale revolutions is done. Like we're not going to have another shale revolution. So like drilling at the pace and at the scale that we had to drill to unlock shale, probably not going to happen again. Unless we find some deeper reserve and the price of oil spikes to 200, right? And then, the price will drive exploration. But outside of that, the big energy crisis that we're talking about is electric. And I just don't know how to square that circle because of what's happening in California. And, you know, if you thought we had a scarce amount of electrical infrastructure in the United States, well, knock out the greater part of LA and well, we don't got that kind of transformers. We just don't. So yeah, there's definitely an energy crisis, but I just don't think it's the one that people think it is.
Do you think we see a big push into nuclear over the next 4 years?
I mean, I hope so, but I think it's going to be a name and not an action because the reality is we just don't got our shit together from the engineering perspective. Even if we wanted to, we don't have the talent. We can't do it. All that talent, all that gumption to be able to do stuff like that is sitting in South Korea. Not even the Chinese can match that. So it's not here.
That's where I would say I could see Trump trying to really incentivize this to get it taken care of. Like, again, I don't think it'll be solved in the next 4 years, but I think he does a huge push to try and get things rolling, clear a lot of the restrictions, the regulations on it to get it done and implemented. Because again,
we could invite South Korea here. Like, that's a thing. Like, we could do what everybody else in the world does, which is bring the best to them. But the reality is we probably won't. And it's probably because at the end of the day, and I've said this a lot, look, if we wanted to make electricity free, the United States has all of the power to unlock, nuclear rich, like weapons grade reactors that would be the size of a pickup truck. And that would do a whole city by itself. So it's the tech is here. We just don't want to use it for a lot of different reasons. But, you want to look at the perfection that is the safety record of the underwater fleet of nuclear reactors that the U.S. operates. tell me it's not possible.
I think you make some really good points. I think it's very interesting that Thiel was sitting with Hegseth, and you know, I think that's kind of promising in a way if it's done right. I think there's an understanding out there that there is, you know, an understanding that first and foremost that mining has got to be done here in the United States, and secondly that there is a energy sector emergency. And let's not sugarcoat it. Like, there is literally, you know, we've got three grids that are archaic and they're terrible. If we can push the energy problem into a DOD, type of, you know, threat analysis where the, you know, energy becomes, you know, more of a sector of the DOD and this becomes a DOD initiative, then there can be some, you know, there will be things that maybe happen fairly quickly. And I think, like you were talking about, you know, these small, you know, thorium type reactors that we can push into local cities and, you know, different parts of the regions out there where we can get this up and running.
I'm not even talking about thorium, dude. I'm not talking about like next, I'm not talking about fifth or sixth gen stuff. I'm talking about gen three stuff. Because the Gen 3 stuff that is plutonium and weapons grade can make a 6G turn underwater and be okay.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I don't need to get into specifics of which type of energy we need and where it needs to be. I think it's kind of an all of the above type situation and then, you know, decentralized and regional. But I think, you know, the bigger picture here is you've got a guy.
With that, you're talking about, I mean, how long did it take? It would be Elon Musk type project. And I can see him being probably the only one that understands supply chains at the scale necessary to build something like that.
Bitpetro, that's what I was thinking with this whole conversation. I think the engineering is there. I just don't know from a scalability standpoint if the manufacturing and the supply chain aspect of it can ramp up fast enough, especially knowing some of the players in it, specifically in the nuclear aspect. I know there's a lot of consolidation happening right now. So it almost seems like some of the larger players who are dealing with the engineering aspect of it and the custom manufacturing of it have been ramping up access to IP and resources in order to set up for this. But you're still talking about shifting manufacturing over from parts and components and all the raw materials in order to make that happen. And I don't know if we can do that as quickly as we're describing here. I think in 5 to 10 years, it's doable, but I don't know if in 4.
Do you think with the DOD directive or just putting in a national emergency that speeds things up, sets all the red tape?
Sure, it cuts red tape, but you're still missing. I mean, you're talking about producing highly calculated and engineered custom components, right?
It's not even that, Brad. It's think about the enrichment process alone. Like how many steps you need for the fuel to get from dirt to pellet.
Yeah. And that's just one component. I'm looking at physical infrastructure, right? Like you talk about dropping one of these in the midst of a city. Great. Well, what does that look like from a distribution mechanism as well? I think I heard somebody bring up transformers earlier. Does that not change the distribution mechanism at like from the, we'll call it the power plant to just that initial output? Or what does that look like? Because I don't know if our infrastructure is set up for it from the way we've designed the grid and everything else around it as well. So that's where I'm coming from, is not even the refinement process of the fuel. I'm looking at, does it actually shift from an archaic standpoint some of this old infrastructure that's been out there even before? I mean, there's still stuff out there that's from pre-nuclear aspects of things that are still existing in the grid. In certain small towns, it just is. And so are we even set to handle that is my big question.
Yeah, I guess we'll find out here. We should get a little bit more clarity in the next hour or so after Trump is sworn in. So I'm going to go ahead and start wrapping up the show here. But before I finish everything up, a couple things I want to ask and then just mention. If you're in the Northeast Houston area, I and my wife will be hosting a Bitcoin meetup, on the 29th. So if you're in the Houston area, just send me a direct message and I will go ahead and forward you the details on that. Again, it's the end of this month, Wednesday, the 29th. Really quick before everybody drops down, Shane, drop down. All right, BitPetro, Bob, Bradley, I'm going to ask you, I just want to really quick, does Trump free Ross today, and does he create strategic Bitcoin reserve?
I'm going to go yes, no. I think he's clearly made a bunch of, like,
go ahead, Bob.
Fruit, and it just makes sense. Easy to do with the stroke of a pen, whereas some of these things are going to take some more time, especially related to deregulation, crypto policy, strategic Bitcoin reserve, those type of things. I think the states actually have, even though there's been different legislation proposed by Cynthia Lummis, I think the states actually will probably be first movers there.
Bradley, you want to go or you want to go last?
I can go last.
Okay.
Fine.
I'm going to say he pardons Trump. He pardons Ross today, or commutes a sentence. And I believe he's not going to create a strategic Bitcoin reserve. I think he will create a task force to look into it, but he will stop selling all of the seized Bitcoin. If I was going to guess, that's what happens today. So he mentions it, doesn't create it, creates a task force to look into it, and points everybody to the Lummis bill.
I would agree with you, and I think he will push it towards the states to do it first, or at least a select handful of them. And I think specifically if the government were to get into a strategic reserve of Bitcoin, he would try to deploy some sort of resource allocation to producing the Bitcoin before it's actually into a strategic reserve. That's just my thought, because it spurs up all of the manufacturing and everything else, which is more economically driven for the people who are not in Bitcoin yet. And I think that's how he gets the buy-in to do that from a federal standpoint.
No, I agree. And there's less risk. If Bitcoin price tanks, he didn't commit to it fully. He was just investigating, and the states will go in first. And if he wins, he looks like Daryl. He mentioned first, gave the approval. So if I was going to put money, I think that's the way it plays out. But we'll see. Trump surprises everybody, so I wouldn't be surprised if he says he's going to go ahead and sell everything to buy a million Bitcoin. Again, that could have just as high probability as him not mentioning it at all. So time will tell. Today will be interesting. But that's it. As I have for everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in. I want to thank Bradley for joining up here. I think we had Tip. I forget this first acronym, but from Argentina, I want to thank you for coming up. BitPetro, of course. We had Eomar and Shane and Bob. Thank you so much for helping co-host today. We will be here tomorrow, in some form, some way, some one way or another. We will be here with Bob Burnett, Barefoot Mining. So I really look forward to picking his brain. 10 a.m. Eastern time. Go out there, stay warm, orange pill your friends and family, send them that video that Joe Bryan had, created. It's really short. It's really easy to watch. Just do not shitcoin. It's like trying to drive a car with no gas.
That's really hard, by the way.